League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
HOU Files, the ultimate Texans podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
It is time for the big interview. It is time for us to dive in with the Houston Texans. We do that with Matt Hammond from Sports Radio 610 in Houston. Matt, thanks for making some time for us. Let's dive right into this. If you had to give a letter grade for what you've seen out of the Texans so far here in the preseason, what would it be?
I'd have to say pass, because that's really what the preseason is, right? It's pass-fail. Do you look the part or don't you? I think with the preseason, there are certain things that you look from every position. With the quarterback, I think it's poise. That's why Dak Prescott looked so good. I think with skill position players, it's athleticism. With offensive and defensive linemen, it's alignment and assignment football. Can you just line up and beat the guy in front of you? But I don't think that for a number of reasons you can take the preseason with anything more than a grain of salt. It's glorified practice. You know, schemes are very simplified. The things that, you know, when you think of the importance of having a Bill Belichick or a Bruce Arians or, you know, top head coaches, top coordinators in the league, you don't really have that in the preseason because you don't have schemes. So what I'll say about the Texans is, just per the eye test, that looks like a top offense. It looks like when they get J.J. Watt back, they have players and pieces in place that can make for a top defense. So I don't know that I can really give you A, B, C, D, F, because I don't know that in the preseason you can really get an A or fail. But I'll say this, they pass in this hypothetical, theoretical pass-fail college class with flying colors.
Matt Hammond, Sports Radio 610 in Houston, our guest here on the podcast as we talk about the Texans. You find him on Twitter at Matt Hammond Show. Matt, J.J. Watt posting the picture of himself on Instagram this week that just said, soon. I'm assuming that means he thinks he's getting back in the field and he's not somehow launching yet another marketing or sales campaign. Is that your takeaway as well?
Yeah, I don't know that soon really has a ring to it. If that was going to be maybe accompanying his shoe deal, and the shoe that dropped as part of a commercial campaign. Yeah, I think that's what it is. And we've seen a number of different statements from the team, a number of different statements from Watt that all point to him being back on the field week one, week two of the regular season. The real question is how long until he's going to be himself. But that being said, I think that if you combine how good the Texans' medical staff has generally been with this stuff, I mean, with Jadeveon Clowney a year ago, months in advance, they said August 18th, that's the date for Jadeveon Clowney's return. You can expect him to be back on the field on August 18th. And like clockwork, he was. So they do a good job of generally setting a timeline. And if you're rolling your eyes and saying, okay, well, Clowney's been an injury problem his entire 2 years in Houston, it hasn't been for the knee. I mean, it was the sports hernia, then it was a concussion, then it was the knee, now it's a foot. Once he had gotten over the knee was fine. So I think when you combine just how well the Texans medical staff generally is with this type of stuff, with coming up with timetables and forecasting returns, then you also got to remember for JJ and for his brand and his image, rightly or wrongly, there are a lot of people who want to see JJ fail. So especially when he's putting these statements out that tend to be you know, they tend to be eye roll city for a lot of national fans and media. Deadspin, Stu Gotts from the Dan Le Batard show. If JJ was to put something out like this and he couldn't live up to that, there were a lot of people just waiting for the gotcha moment with JJ, waiting for the fucking last moment. I think unfairly, but yeah, I think when you see, as much as it's almost kind of ridiculous in 2016 that JJ putting out a Instagram post with the word soon elevates to real news, but I guess that's where we're at. Yeah, when he says soon on Instagram, that to me says two things. He expects to be back on the field week one, week two, and pretty close to 100%.
Let's stick on the defensive side of things here. Let's talk about Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, it looks like you've finally got some health. You've got the guy that they've been wanting out there on defense along with J.J. Watt to wreak havoc. What's the takeaway so far, and does the coaching staff think that this healthy Clowney is a thing to stay?
I think, to me, what you've seen from Clowney in not just this preseason but even last preseason, it validates the draft pick, because the complaint that fans have is, you know, we sit through this 2-14 season, and really the only consolation prize is that we get the number one overall pick. And then with this number one overall pick, you select a guy who's missed more games in his first two seasons in the NFL than any number one overall pick since 1994. That's a stat. And so I think for a lot of fans, they've got to understand that you can't project injuries with certain players. I mean, like, if they had taken Marcus Lattimore, say, in the second round or the third round, a guy from South Carolina whose knee blew up and it just never, you know, he never got his career back on track, that'd be one thing. But Clowney, if there were any real questions about Clowney in college, none of them had to do with his durability. So what you're seeing from Clowney, when healthy, this preseason against the Saints, or last preseason against the Falcons, it validates the draft pick. Because I'll say this, Jadeveon Clowney at his best looks far and away better than Khalil Mack at his best. I mean, I know that it's the preseason. Khalil Mack's a proven player. He's got a lot of production. But if you're just looking, like, if I'm Greg Postel and I'm looking at the tape and it's who projects as the better talent, what you've seen from Jadeveon Clowney, albeit in the preseason, because again, it's just alignment and assignment football. Can you beat the guy in front of you? And understanding that we're not really talking about production and career body of work, Jadeveon Clowney greater than signed Khalil Mack if he can stay healthy. The obvious question is now, can he stay healthy? And I think that that's going to be the question for 2 years. I mean, I think Jadeveon Clowney, in order to grow out of injury risk, injury concern, I think he's got to play 16 games for two seasons. I think that's, you could also make the same argument with a guy like Steph Curry. I mean, much like with Steph Curry, we're just kind of waiting for the next one. That's kind of where we're at with Jadeveon Clowney. But I'll say this, if he can just stay on the field, what a fireworks show that's going to be.
Matt Hammond with me as we roll through the Houston Texans here in the preseason and a couple of weeks out from the start of the regular season. You were just talking about draft picks. Let's talk about this year. Obviously, Houston trying to get some help for DeAndre Hopkins. We see Will Fuller go in the first round. We see Braxton Miller in the third round. How's it coming along with those two in terms of finding some more receiving options, not only for Brock Osweiler, but to help take some pressure off of Hopkins?
I mean, so far, so good. It's, you know, with Will Fuller, this isn't to say that he's a one-trick pony or that he'll only ever be a guy who's just a deep threat, a straight-line runner, and you can put the ball over the top and, you know, you get big splash plays. But if nothing else, he gives you that, right? Like, anything else after that is kind of a bonus. And with Will Fuller, like, you got to remember, with that type of speed, I mean, he's got DeSean Jackson quick, and frankly, a bigger body and less baggage, it only takes one, right? Like mm-hmm. Will Fuller can be quite literally game-changing on almost a single play. It's almost like when you watch Big Tuna, where if they catch one fish, that's they're good for months. So with Will Fuller, I mean, I think that, you know, it's like with all these receivers, there's going to be an adjustment process to the NFL game, and you know, at his position, he's going to have to understand, you know, how to navigate zones on crossing routes, or, you know, if I'm breaking on a post, do I go, do I break behind the safety or in front of the safety, stuff like that. But I think what you've seen from Will Fuller thus far is he can do the one thing that he's got to do with nothing else, and that's get behind the defense and catch deep balls for touchdowns. So that's Will Fuller. With Braxton Miller, I think that he can be ready to produce relatively early in the season, but if he's not, you're not breaking the glass. I mean, you understand that for a slot wide receiver, that might be the most intensive skill position in terms of the learning curve on the field outside of quarterback, because you have option routes, and you have to navigate zones, and there's so much that goes into the position that for any wide receiver, whether you have experience at the position or not, that's going to be something of a learning curve. And then you couple that with the fact that he's a former quarterback, and this is only his second season as a wide receiver. It may take some time, but he has flashed real athleticism, real playmaking ability as an open field runner. The comp with Braxton Miller, at least that I've seen based on having watched him with the Texans, having watched him last year at Ohio State, I mean, it looks like Percy Garner. That's just what it looks like. So if you can get that on a consistent basis, I mean, those are two guys, Deshaun Jackson, Percy Harvin, that would really pop, especially when you couple them with New Hopkins. And I think one of the things that the Texans have done this preseason is DeAndre Hopkins only has 3 targets in 2 games. So what does that tell you? That clearly they're trying to get Will Fuller up to speed. Clearly they're trying to get Braxton Miller up to speed, because based on everything that we're hearing at practice, there's already a chemistry and a relationship with Brock Osweiler. So if you have it, what's the point in drilling it? What's the point in proving it? You know that it's there. Just use these game reps and these game opportunities just to get the other two guys on the same page, not to mention Lamar Miller. So, there is an embarrassment of riches in terms of speed, talent, athleticism on the offensive side of the ball for the Texans. Now the question is, can Brock Osweiler keep it all together?
Great stuff from Matt Hammond. You find him on Twitter at Matt Hammond Show, part of Sports Radio 610 in Houston, talking Texans with us. Matt, appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going around the league next. Stick around. The coach, Brian Billick, joins us. Don't go anywhere.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick. It is the coach, Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your offseason been?
It's been great. As usual, too short, but it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the offseason and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves, so let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously L.A. doing it with Jared Goff, and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback, let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, what the old adage is, if you have 2 or 3 quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits in the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far? And that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if. That's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, when he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. But if there's some potential, it looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good. Because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy. But if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott, this is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, that you say that, people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how he feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL is going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy. But obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, get a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter in your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer, so he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, and that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Peterson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Grady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year. Hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of hold, be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Well, I don't think so, particularly when we're talking, it's kind of talking out of both sides of the mouth when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lochte. And how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much, much more difficult. And that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand. And if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and the work I do for the NFL Network, for at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing about who are the teams that are going to surprise us? And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, is Jacksonville. Now, they need to be good because obviously Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with E.J. Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat Well, that division's on the hot seat because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year, you go, how can a first year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville, where he went 1 year and got fired. The expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better, and obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be, you know, could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on the hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for Overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in Overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Double check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think it no doubt Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week three of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the two behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian, somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number two. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me except in December when they win the division.
All right, question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
Ooh. I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a dropback passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle is an issue. They have some weapons offensively, but blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclass.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the Overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week. And it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.